Hello, Bonsai friends. This is Evan Pardue of Underhill Bonsai, and welcome to episode 104 of Little Things for Bonsai People. It is 2025. My notes say four still. I'll change that real quick. The year of the snake, that's Chinese calendar, I guess. I don't know. I think I might just start making this a thing for now on forever, as long as we do this, just be confused as what like animal I'm representing here each year.
Nice.
So I don't know. But yeah,
we year did the, of the cat.
Not yet. A thing. You might get there one day. But yeah, if you cannot tell who my co-host is today, or just know of her on a regular basis with us on the show, it is Carmen Leskovinsky. How's it going, Carmen?
Pretty good. How are you?
Pretty well. Thanks for hanging out today.
Anytime.
It's a little bit short notice, and I know that we might have a little hiccup in scheduling, and it's whatever. I mean, it's just the way things are going to go for now on. Because scheduling, being on a tight schedule of a weekly release with a 6-month-old now, and you have a 10-year-old, but I mean, he's fine, right?
11, so, but yeah.
11, geez. Yeah, Gus is growing up a little bit since I've met him, so. So awesome. Yep. But yeah, we're going to be covering a topic today that I think is pretty interesting and controversial. I kind of brainstormed it up, you know, a couple of nights ago. I was just kind of thinking about what would be really interesting this year. And Carmen's really into hot take kind of type topics. So I'd like to bring this up to her. So today's topic will be Yamadori or not. Basically, should you dig a Yamadori or should you get a field grown piece of material?
Aha.
And the pros and the cons of those things. And we can get on our soapboxes and kind of think about why is it bad versus, you know, because I was watching a YouTube video the other day, and I watch a lot of YouTube, just letting you guys know. I mean, they say how like a cable's dead and stuff. It definitely is. So like all my subscriptions are like streaming services and stuff. And I was watching this YouTube video of this guy, I think he was in Italy somewhere, and he's collecting a pine out of some rocky area. It was hilly, lots of rocks, and he peeled this pine tree up out of this crack. And in the comments, people were just firing off. They were saying, this is wrong, you're disturbing nature, and so on and so forth. So I want to talk about that and go into what it is and why. Does that sound good?
Oh yeah, this is great. Topic.
Yeah, it's a cool topic. But before we get to that, would you want to mention that our show is sponsored by our amazing patrons over at patreon.com/littlethingsforbonsaipeople. Head on over there and become a bonsai best bud and hang out in the Discord and talk bonsai all day with these people as well. We have so many patrons now, like I said a while back, that we always shout out our patron of the week. We used to say all the patrons at the beginning of every episode earlier on. If you guys are longtime listeners, you know, it got kind of ridiculous. So we have a featured best bud this week, and it's going to be Joseph Domingue. Thank you for being a longtime listener and patron of our show, Joseph. I've said your name several times, along with some of the other bonsai best buds have been in there for a good bit. And also we had another one that somebody asked me why I said their name as a bonsai friend versus best bud. I'm going to have to go back and find that message. I apologize if that was the case, but I will find your message a little bit later on here. But anyway, so we also have our main show sponsors, Joshua Roth Tools and Underhill Bonsai will be sponsoring the show from this point on. Our specimen pest buds are Unrayuin Bonsai Garden in Australia, Bill's Bayou, Bill Butler, and of course, our newest best bud, Mark McWilliams. Thank you guys for sponsoring at the $30 level. That's amazing. It helps us pay Matt and keep Matt happy. I had to ask him just a moment ago to edit some stuff out because I got all twisted. So thank you, Matt. But yeah, and can't go much further without mentioning Matt O'Donnell, our editor. He makes us sound smart. He cleans up our audio, makes us really interesting to listen to. You can go over to mattodonnell.com, not O'Donnell. It used to be O'Donnell. He changed it.
That's too bad.
Yeah. But you go to mattodonnell.com, fill out a contact form or email him to start a podcast show or audio engineering project with him. He's a set bassist living in Nashville, Tennessee. It's in the notes. I don't write this stuff down because I don't care, Matt. So let me go in. There was another thing that I wanted to talk about really quick. because, let's see. So Jay, he wanted me to know that whenever I represent or say the name to represent Unryu and Bonsai Garden in Australia, that it's not him. Because Jay is sponsoring on his own separately as a Bonsai Best Bud. It's actually Rick. Rick is the Australian bonsai artist who started the collection that Jay now currently is helping him, you know, take care of and getting up and running and make it more of a public collection in a way. So tell us about Rick that runs Unryu and Bonsai Garden and is currently working with Jay.
Sure. So Rick is 88. He was born and raised in Australia as an Anglican minister's son. He has an arts background and has had many jobs in the past. As a kid, he grew orchards. Orchards or orchids, do you think?
I think it's going to be orchards.
Orchards with his dad. He was interested in bonsai while working in Detroit for a few years. Oh, hey, that's by me. in the late 50s, doing marketing and graphics for J.L. Hudson. Oh, God, Hudson. Do you remember the department store Hudson?
Hudson's.
Maybe you don't.
I don't think we have those down here.
Well, we used to. I remember
No, it's okay.
Tangenting during Jay's email, but there's a big building called the Hudson Building. And I remember when they imploded it, it was like live on TV. Anyway, all right. So back to Rick. He was interested in bonsai while working in Detroit for a few years in the late 50s, doing marketing and graphics for J.L. Hudson. On his way home, he made a trip to Japan in 1958.
Wow.
The bonsai bug truly bit, and he has been a major contributor to the Australian bonsai scene ever since, mostly on the East Coast, and his biggest impact was in New South Wales and the Sydney area, but he would travel to clubs all up and down the East Coast from Queensland to Tasmania. He's helped found clubs and was a member of many and a lifetime member of a few. The last of the original selection team and committee for the national collection. He was one of those billeting and helping to bring in international artists from Europe, Japan, and America, including John Naka, who we have many drawings of the trees that he designed here in Australia. Rick's 1975 Shimpaku Kishu juniper raft being one. That's the juniper chinensis raft that we critiqued on the podcast. Rick was president of the Association of Australian Bonsai Clubs, LTD. Rick has attended most, if not all, the World Bonsai Conventions. And last year was the first time he missed the Australian National Convention, as it's getting more difficult for him to travel. The garden, which we are hoping to have open by the end of this year, it's Rick's dream to have his collection being able to stay together and not fade into obscurity like so many other legacy trees of Australian bonsai history. Combined with his passion for bonsai in Australia and wanting to permanently contribute to bonsai in Australia and help elevate it, providing education for the general public and bonsai community to have a top-level display garden. At this stage, he is funding all of this privately through the Unryu N Trust he set up. We'll be looking at options like sponsorships, memberships, grants, etc. And if anyone wants to get involved, please feel free to email me. That's email J, info@unryun.org.au.
Awesome.
That's a great story.
I'm really glad that we got that, because for a while there, I was assuming that Jay was kind of manning that kind of thought process there for the sponsorship and stuff. But Rick actually wanted us to know that it's been solely his contributions for that. And that's really, really cool. We really appreciate that. And I talk about how we have so many Australian listeners. We really do. Australia's coming up. It's very strong down there. And Rick's been in the game for a long time, it sounds. And now that there's more actually like stronger clubs that are forming, it sounds like, because more and more artists are being able to get there and do stuff. Didn't Michael go there recently?
He was... I think the pandemic was still in place. So he did like an online presentation. But I think World Bonsai is there this year. I think it's April he's going, I think.
Awesome.
For a big convention.
I mean, it has, a lot of stuff is like a lot of the gears are moving now post-pandemic. Bonsai interest is the highest it's ever been. And I think it's going to It's going to, some people are saying it's peaked. I think it'll keep going. I think
it has not peaked.
Yeah, so it is. People are still going hard, going to, you know, bonsai nurseries and shows and stuff. It's getting really good. And so, yeah, I wanted to talk about, but yeah, before we move on, thank you so much, Rick. Just wanted to specify that. Thank you so much. So for our $30 member, we will say instead of Jay, we will definitely say Rick of Unryu Bonsai Garden for our specimen best bud there. Thank you very much. But yeah, speaking of traveling and doing some stuff, I just came off the tail end of traveling to Florida. I think I mentioned it on the previous episode. I just wanted to say some of the highlights, some of the things that I actually experienced down there for the listeners. And I've been texting and calling a few people, but en masse, we'll just talk about what happened. I don't think I've told Carmen a lot, but, you know, but anyway, I'm trying to stop saying, but anyway, so I was anyway. On my way down to first stop I made was into the Tampa area. So that was right there in that little peninsula on a peninsula area kind of spot. But on my way down there, I left a day early because I had talked to the person who was coordinating this. His name's Christopher Crisanza. I hope we get your last name right. I'm notorious for that. But Chris, if you're listening, thank you for organizing that. And he strung together all these stops and all these bonsai club meetings and stuff that I could do. And it was really, really cool. And I was thinking about it. I was like, I've always wanted to go see David Cutchin and go see D&L. And so I texted Chris and I was like, if I leave a little early, how far is David's location from you? And Chris was just like instantly like, go. He was like, he's only a few hours. It's like, he's like 2 hours tops. Go see it. It's worth it. In fact, David has actually mentioned that he would love for you to stop by. And I was like, okay, let's do this. Cool. So I left a day early and I went down there and I went to go see D&L Bonsai Nursery. It's on the outskirts of Ocala, Florida. And I forgot the name of the city. It's not a city. It's more like a village, but it's I learned this when I got there and I was talking to other people. It's the equestrian capital of the world, apparently, where there's just some of the most expensive horses, like show horses you've ever seen. So I don't know if you were familiar with that, Carmen. If you
had no idea. Mm-mm.
Yeah, like it's apparently like the spot. And then if you say that to other people, they like just agree. They're like, yes, there's like, I don't know, some rare species that does really well in Florida. That's there. One horse is apparently worth millions or something. I don't know. But that's pretty crazy. So I went and hung out with David. And of course I wanted to see his pond cypresses. I'm a bald cypress man. Got to mention it every episode. And I was on my way down there to teach bald cypress stuff, of course. And so I thought it was a great segue to go see pond cypresses. And I ended up getting one, from David. It's really funny because I loaded my truck up with trees that I was going to do for workshops and demos. And I intentionally did not bring the trailer that I normally bring with me because I did not want to bring stuff home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I ended up cutting a deal with David and I got the shortest pond cypress he had and it fit in my truck. And I was like, damn it. I did it anyway. So it was still good. It's a really sweet tree. I don't know if I showed you a picture of it, but I'll show you later. But yeah, it's a really cool little tree. But getting to see his trees, talk to him about the history of the pond cypresses and what they are and how he developed this and is continuing the work of Mary Madison's pond cypress collection spots. And he's also really involved in wildlife and fisheries in the past. He was like a ranger, I guess you can say. I'm probably getting that a little askew to what he did, but it was basically it's like somebody who manages like parks and stuff, parks and rec basically, but the whole state of Florida. So he's very experienced with that. And I thought that was really cool, especially coming from horticulture, like somebody who understands ecology and also someone who loves bonsai. You know what I mean? So that was a really interesting, you know, I got there at, I think, 7. I think I showed up a little bit like before 8 o'clock or so, started talking, hung out, closed up at 5. I mean, I was there all day, just talking bonsai, talking shop. You know, it was really, really cool. Then I went down to see the people in Tampa and everyone was so sweet. Everybody I met was so forward and warm. And everybody that had trees, they had good trees. And I was like, oh, let's make this a great tree. So I got to work on a lot of good cypress trees, repot a few trees. In fact, I say a few, I repotted 5 cypress trees and styled probably somewhere around the ballpark for like 10 trees or so, like did a complete styling on them. A few of those, including the trees we styled. And it was just a big trip on top of doing two demos, I mean. So one for Hokyu, which is in the Tampa Bay area, and then another one called Shofu, which is in the Sarasota area. And then I talked to Charlie. He's the president of the Gainesville Club. And I said, hey, I'm on my way back. Oh, do you want to schedule this whenever I'm on my way up going home? And I tacked on Gainesville Club for a workshop and demo with them. And so these two other demos that I did was like in a, you've seen that, like a convention little area, like a building rental, mm-hmm. and it's a nice space. Like usually it's in a botanical garden kind of setup. So those two were intimidating when I walked up, but they were a lot of fun. The people were really engaging. But when I got to Gainesville, it was in someone's garage with their group. And it was like Gainesville's very like my neck of the woods, like very country backwoods kind of feeling. And I was so at home. And instead of doing bald cypress for them, Charlie wanted me to do water elms. So I was like excited to do that. I was like, great, let's do history of water elms. Let's build on this topic of them. So I got really fired up this past week. Let's just say that I was in a great mood. So like I told you, Carmen, if anyone ever asks you to do anything in Florida, just do it. It's a lot of fun. So
yeah, it sounds like it was a great trip.
Yeah, it was really cool. So. And then kind of segues into what's happening now is I get home, and the first night I'm home, I'm moving my trees in my house and putting my biggest trees against my house and trying to cover them because we got 10 inches of snow in most parts of Louisiana today. So.
And like, it's really good that we put out the winter episode like just in time for this because, oh my God. Yeah, that's totally wild. And this is like once in a decade thing you were saying to me earlier today. Like, this is crazy.
Well, it snowed for the first time in New Orleans since, it's been a very long time since it snowed in New Orleans area. For us, it snowed back in 2017. And then before that, it snowed almost another full 10 years before that. So it hadn't been too long since its last snowed, you know, and me and Caitlin had to sit back and think about it. It'd been like roughly 7 years almost because our dog, we got him right after the last time it snowed. So he's 7 years old this year. So it's pretty funny. I was like, damn, this happens not often, but it's happening. It feels like the window is closing like smaller and smaller between each one. Each time it snows like this, it's crazy.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Well, okay.
And climate is changing, so yeah,
a little bit. We'll say that, but we're not gonna go too far into that, and you know, stir the shit not too much. But
I mean, I'm
yeah. As bonsai people, it's a little bit more apparent, but you know, but yeah. So you told me you get wind chills around somewhere like pretty nice right now.
It feels like -6. So
-6.
Really pleasant. really pleasant to be outside right now. Yeah. But cold storage is holding up. All of our temperatures are averaging at like 36. So we're good. And bad to be outside, but good to be inside.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of your work involves going into cold storage and doing anything with the trees right now, or are you just kind of taking it easy?
I've kind of laid off a little bit this week just because it's been chilly and there's been some other stuff to work on. I've been trying to focus a little bit more on our tropical stuff since it's so cold. But usually if I'm working on something, I'll pull it into one of the greenhouses or like our hallway. So I'll pull it inside so I'm not totally freezing. It's about like 65, you know, in there on a normal day. And so the tree will stay in there for a day or sometimes 2 days and then go back out to cold storage. So not long enough to break dormancy, but I have worked out in cold storage, but if you're not dressed appropriately, you will get thoroughly chilled. So usually I bring them in.
You get uncomfortable pretty quick.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, that's really interesting. -6, we're not too far off. Tonight, it's supposed to get down to like 9 or 8.
Mm-hmm. That's really cold.
That's crazy for Louisiana, because that means all of the ice, me and my wife were walking around earlier today, and it was, the ice was that powdered, like just not packed. And mm-hmm. so it's like crunchy, crazy, kind of like weird thing for us. And then the ice is starting to melt a little bit and the temperature went up slightly mm-hmm. and then it's going to drop. And so we're going to get that like black ice on the roads everywhere and it's going to be hazardous to go. It's just, it's getting really crazy. And
you're going to get that like crunchy crust on top of the snow.
Yes. And I'm worried about tomorrow because there's a lot of people, a lot of businesses have shut down for today. So it's like officially a snow day. And then they're telling some people that they have to go to work tomorrow. And I'm like, ooh, it's going to be a little crazy. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how that goes.
But yeah. As somebody who grew up driving in snow, like if you have to drive, like you can throw your car into low gear and then just go slow. Don't hold your brakes down. Pulse your brakes if you're sliding. Steer into the swerve, like go slow. Don't panic. It makes it worse.
Does it snow often? I thought it snowed every, like, I thought you guys would still be kind of snowed in.
We're not snowed in, but we have snow. We haven't gotten more than a couple inches at a time this year, but it's still there. So it's like an inch and a half kind of
hanging out.
Started to melt, refroze. Now it's just cold. It's not a significant amount of snow. I'm kind of jealous of your amount of snow. It would feel better being this cold if there was also snow to go with it. But I mean, I guess it's lucky that there isn't snow, because when we have these cold temperatures, if there is a lot of snow with it, we'll sometimes lose power. And like that could be bad for the rest of the greenhouses that are a much older system. So the bonsai would be fine, but like the conservatory and all of our older greenhouses we're already struggling to keep a couple of them at a temperature that we want overnight. So if the power went out, it would be problematic.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things too. I told you earlier, I was like, if the lights go out, I still want to record this episode just to kind of capture this experience, because it's just, and like I said, we might record an episode years like later on and say, you know, you remember that time it snowed and then it might happen again. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. It's fun to capture it when it's happening. There's just that kind of excitement or like craziness of the moment that's worth doing.
Yeah. So yeah, it's so funny because I'm so, and that's one of the things I did want to say, like just to our listeners and everyone about where I'm at right now, is like, I'm very happy with where Underhill and, you know, where I feel like I am with bonsai right now. I'm thrilled. And then we get this snow day. I'm like, okay, this is really cool. You know, I got really worried, you know, but, I see pictures being shared online of all the other people that live in New Orleans area and they got a lot of snow and they're like Randy Bennett of the, you know, of the Facebook Bald Cypress group and also of New Orleans old bonsai. He just left his trees on the benches and woke up this morning and everything was just blanketed. And he was like, oh, okay. So he was like, I'm just going to leave them there, I guess. I don't know what to do, because some of his trees are too big to move by himself. He was like, I mm-hmm. guess this is just going to happen. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty crazy. But anyway, yeah, let's get into the juicy topic at hand here.
All right.
The Yamadori versus field grown. Yeah, I was trying to, I was trying to show you that out the window here. You can't really see. It's too bright.
No, I can't see. But I saw the pictures of Rory in the snow. It's so cute.
Yeah, he's
look
been
at him.
Out. Yeah.
No, that's not better. I still can't see it.
Hey guys, it's Evan with Underhill Bonsai, and I just want to tell you guys about Say Bonsai. It's going to be happening from March 28th to the 30th, 2025.
We're going to be everything Louisiana for a full weekend. So we're going to include a crawfish boil, homemade gumbo, and other food trucks and vendors that are very special, I guess you can say, the southern culture of Louisiana. And also the show will include a bonsai show with its own special awards, including Best in Show, Best Shohin, Best Traditional Design, People's Choice Award, and also a tongue-in-cheek Best Bald Cypress Bonsai Award. Guest artists and visiting artists will include Julian Tsai, Sylvia Smith, Mike Lane, Carmen Lesko-Bianski, Dawn Ketting, Randy Bennett, and Guy Guidry. Each artist will be presenting demonstrations and giving workshops throughout the weekend. You can go over to underhillbonsaistore.com and go under our Save Bonsai Workshops tab, and you can sign up for just regular attendance. It's going to be $25 just to get into the exhibit tent, and then all the workshops will be spaced out and they will all have individual pricing. We hope to see you guys there.
This podcast is supported by Bonsai Bar, the beginner bonsai workshop popping up in breweries all across the Northeast. Bonsai Bar is 2 hours of tiny tree goodness disguised as a night out with friends. Come grab drinks, create a new tree, and watch as your friends and family get the bug for bonsai. Bonsai Bar is always looking for teachers and assistants, and you listen to this podcast, so you're probably already qualified. Bring your knowledge out to the bar. Apply today. Find event tickets, contact info, and more at bonsaibar.com.
But yeah, let's get into Yamadori versus field grown question mark. It's kind of like, so we're gonna do some hot takes, some soapbox balancing acts here, and say who's got a better opinion. Not really. I mean, it just doesn't matter.
My opinion is the best.
So. Yeah, it doesn't matter whose opinion it is. You know, if people get fired up in Facebook comments and YouTube comments and Instagram stuff and et cetera, and you have people who spout off and say stuff like, "You're hurting the environment. You should have left it where you found it. You're greedy for having taken this tree. Why don't you just grow a tree from a seed?" And mm-hmm. So I did want to kind of touch on that the thought behind it. I get it. I really, really do. And me as a bonsai practitioner and also a nursery man, I do collect trees from the wild. And so not what I do is necessarily be called Yamadori, because that is the mountain collection terminology that came from Japan. And that is true to be said that a lot of those trees are collected from the mountains, and they're old trees. And then there's that debate whether or not we are collecting Yamadori, or if I'm just collecting what basically is a quote unquote field grown tree, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, a quick like skim before we get too heavy on the topic is kind of like, so I see it as like a couple of different things. Like, yes, there are trees that are better left where they are as like beauty and nature and representation of what Mother Nature can do and the art that she can create that we can't do, that should be inspiration to what we want to do with our own trees. And then there's also the side of it as, and this was something that this topic was linked up to a conversation I had with David Cutchin, is when you go out and collect these old trees, like he's getting the pond cypress, it is curating and also, what's the other word I'm looking for? Conservation of the species is the argument. Is it conservation of the species to collect them and have that old tree as a representation of what is out there as well, so that we can do conservation? When someone sees it as a beautiful bonsai tree, they're like, "Oh my God, that's beautiful." And you're like, then you can tell a story and make that tree important. Does that make sense? So yeah. How do you feel, Carmen, as like a skim on the topic, and then we'll deep dive into the sections of it?
I want to kind of go into what you just said about the conservation topic, but I can save that for a deep dive a little bit later if that's better.
So we'll break up what I said into parts and what you say into parts, if there's differentiations in our opinions on that.
So I don't, let me see. I think that Yamadori collection is not a bad thing when you are specifically going out and collecting, you know, a relatively low number of trees to turn into bonsai, and you know what you're doing. The trees are going to somebody who will take care of them, so that they can thrive to the best of their ability. You know, it's not always a guarantee 100% the tree is going to live, but, you know, best chances of survival. I have a problem with Yamadori collection when it's just kind of collecting for collecting's sake, or collecting as much as you can to then sell for profit. Like, I'm not saying don't sell for profit. That's people are making a living off of this, but be selective in what you are choosing, and sell to people who are going to care for them. So it's kind of an intention thing in my mind of like,
interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then, but also I think too, you know, in some cases, the land's going to be developed for whatever reason. And so, you know, if you can get somebody in to collect whatever might be good bonsai, then in that case, that's a very good thing. But if you're going into private land or taking something that really, you know, you shouldn't be taking, it's not yours, you don't have the right permit, whatever, like, then, you know, there's a line there. So I don't think it's necessarily, I think a lot of it is intention and ethics when it comes to, you know, how I view it.
So I think that gives me a good little list here of things to kind of deeper dive into, is what Mother Nature can do rather than what we could accomplish.
Mm-hmm.
Conservation, which that's, I'm going to put that one at the end of the list.
Okay. That's the one I have the most feelings about.
Exactly. I feel like that one's going to be really, you know, and then there's making a profit on the trees versus what you should collect or not. And then over collecting in areas, and then the overall ethics of why and where. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of like going into the first one then. So what Mother Nature can do, why is Yamadori like so appealing to people? So, you know, we go up into, like, I was up in Denver not too long ago, and I did go to the Rocky Mountain National Park. And yes, there were trees. There were ponderosa pines and spruces and Rocky Mountain, all the stuff. Check all the lists of like really cool alpine collected trees. There were trees that I saw dangling from, you know, rock faces and just in, you know, embedded in into the stone, and had these just designs and old. And we say design because we're thinking about it as a bonsai, not as a piece of nature sometimes, which is what I'm trying to separate here. Is like, we see all these great inspirations, but these in turn are still real trees. They have been here on this planet for some of them hundreds, some of them thousands of years. Mm-hmm. And so in bonsai, we're trying to create ancient, and the only way to be shown the ancient is to go find it, and look at it and observe it. And some people take it upon themselves to take the ancient home with them. We'll get into that in a minute, but just starting lightly, not going to get too crazy and, you know, up in the clouds with it at the moment. But that's the basis of why people collect trees. And the Japanese culture, bonsai culture, they collected a lot of trees. And those were the true Yamadori. And they were the true representation of old trees. And for some purists in the Yamadori and bonsai scene, Yamadori are Yamadori and bonsai are bonsai. It's separate. It's like, this is a Yamadori collected tree. Nothing else can be this. And then there's the ones that are grown. And that's the thing in Japan now, is they over-collected and there's nothing left in the mountains to collect anymore because of the popularity and the unsustainability of that model of going out. And like you said, collecting trees, profiting off of them, you know, collecting more, so on and so forth, to the point, because they've been doing bonsai for a long time compared to us, like hundreds of years. There's, in America, I think the heyday, the beginning of bonsai here was in the 50s. So
and there's so much more land. So it's just like, that's just to start really lightly on this is Mother Nature shows us ancient. And so if we want to go see a species and we want to see what it looks like, for instance, the pond cypress is a great statement to say, I want to make an old bald cypress look like an old tree in miniature. Mm-hmm. They are already dwarfed. They're already small. The ones that I've seen collected that was at DNL. And I was like, those are great representations. And I actually got inspired. I was like, I'll design a tree after that tree that I saw. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So what do you think about the Mother Nature part?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you want to see old deadwood, like you get a 500-year-old tree out of the mountains. Like if you want to see bark, you get a 500-year-old tree out of the mountain. You know, like they provide examples for what we are trying to attain when we are not using collected material. And so I think, you know, in that case, it is really valuable to at least have some Yamadori present so that people can see these kinds of things. Because, I mean, there's also that accessibility factor of, you know, not everybody's going to be able to go hike up a mountain and see this tree in the wild. So being able to have examples of what that can be. And then, you know, when you're styling trees, you're highlighting those features, you're highlighting the turns of the trunk or the deadwood or the bark or whatever it is. And so you're really kind of showing off what nature can do with time. And yeah, like you said, it does give us inspiration for when we're creating something from field grown material or when we're buying nursery stock or whatever. It shows us what we want ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like bonsai versus Yamadori collected stuff with deadwood, like you mentioned a little while ago with that, is that in order to achieve that deadwood look, so that, what was that name? What was that word? Somebody told me whenever, I think it's pecking or something, whenever the wood gets, that's probably not the right word, but it's whenever the wood gets so dense
mm-hmm.
and compressed that it actually, instead of cracking long ways, it also cracks the other way as well. And it gives you that checking. It's what they called it.
Yeah.
You get this checking. So that means that you see little squares of mm-hmm. deadwood. And you see this on really old, like pine trees and stuff,
mm-hmm.
Especially like ponderosa. I've seen that a lot.
Yeah.
And that's really charming. And for people, that's that educated eye approach of collected material. It's like you see like that tree and you can see it right off the bat. If it's artificially created deadwood, then you know. Yeah. If you've seen plenty of them and you see that checking in that old compressed grain. And if they were to allow you to touch the tree and you were to like tap it with like a metal tool or something, it would ring true as like solid, like mm-hmm. the rings are tight.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is, you can't beat that. Once you yep. see it, then you know. And then mm-hmm. What's a shame is sometimes you'll see the collected material with that deadwood and then you'll see a spot where someone carved it with carving tools next, like going into it. Yeah, I know, it sucks. I know that's like going to make some people cringe, but to some people, they don't know. They don't know what that means.
Mm-hmm.
Like you pull like an old, you go Rocky Mountain juniper or you go buttonwood from, you know, the South Florida area or whatever. And you take these trees and you have these beautiful deadwood features they're twisted and weird. And the deadwood goes all kind of directions that's unorthodox to what we would expect.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh, if I carve that and made that deadwood smaller, that would make the tree look nicer. And I've seen people do that. And I'm like, oh, please just let the tree be what it is.
Yeah.
And frame it.
That's something, yeah, to consider with Yamadori. If you are using collected material, there is a level of, Michael will always put it as like, there's a level of forgiveness, you know, for these trees for not being necessarily fitting within the aesthetic of Japanese bonsai. Because like with a collected juniper, you're not going to have a nabari probably, you know, but like that's probably okay, because the juniper's 500 years old and mm-hmm. it's twisted and amazing. So like whatever, like you move past it. Or with, you know, some of these pines or whatever, there's, you know, there
ancient. So there's this level of like reverence and forgiveness for not fitting into what we hope it would be, you know, necessarily be. Yeah. So if you have something with deadwood like that, unless there is like, there have been times where I've seen, you know, where removing a piece of deadwood through like breaking it off or whatever, shortening it aesthetically makes it better. That can be the case, but very rarely do you go in and screw around with deadwood that's there, unless you're reducing it and then, you know, breaking it, making it very natural, falling on it, you know, like, yeah. Like you're not just going to go in there and carve it and make it all smooth. And no, that's.
Yeah, that makes that. And there's the argument, too, that if you create deadwood features, and there are people out there that carve deadwood. And this is something I've seen a lot in the UK, like where they developed a lot of bonsai carving tool, like bits and stuff like that and other things. And it's very popular where people will try to replicate a tree that's normally softer wood, or just it should have like a certain look to it. You know, shout out to like Harry Harrington for some of that carving that it just, you can't tell the difference. It's it's hard to see the difference, but you know, because he lays it out and does a lot of instructional videos and blog posting when he talks about that. Mm-hmm. But there's people who have been inspired by that type of carving, and sometimes some people can pull it off and it looks pretty good, but you know when you see it that older, because it's unpredictable. It doesn't do what you want it to do.
Yeah, almost never.
Yeah, exactly. Like I've seen buttonwoods and some junipers and stuff that I've been able to work with. And I'm just looking at this. I'm like, you know, if it was here, that would be great. But instead, it popped out and it caused the vascular system to develop in this weird way where there's like inverse taper somewhere, or there's branches where you have to keep them or you'll kill the tree. Mm-hmm. So that kind of stuff, it presents a challenge. And there's a lot of people who love that challenge, too. So to be fair, if you're looking for a very challenging tree, Yamadori will give you that challenge almost every single time.
Oh, yeah. They are tricky to work with. A lot of times when I've worked with them, you end up cutting off 50 to 60% or more of like the growth. Well, not ponderosa. That's a different story. But a lot of times you're dealing with a lot of foliage reduction or twisting and compression to really, you know, get these trees into a shape. There have been a couple where I've done some work on them, mostly like prep work, like initial branch bending or deadwood work. So, and in that case, it's expanding the deadwood. It's not carving what's already there. It's making more to match it. Where I still, there's one in particular, I still have no idea what that tree is supposed to look like when it's done. I can't picture it. I have no clue. I'm really curious to see what ends up happening with it. But then there's others, and you get an eye for it after a while, but you have to do a lot of work with Yamadori to be able to really, you know, see the forest through the trees, see the tree through the tree. I don't know, whatever that is going to be. It's very tricky.
Yeah. And so let's go to the next topic that we had kind of discussed a little bit was the making a profit and collecting a lot and over collecting and stuff. But before we get into the, like the over collecting and the overall just ethics of collecting, is that collecting to make a profit. So there's always like this whole thing. My brain was saying before we get into that, I was thinking too, was like, were people who collect twisted old trees that look like actual old trees to begin with, and versus people who cut and chop a tree in the wild, which, going to be honest, that's what a lot of bald cypress collecting where I am, that is what it is. So if you guys refer back to my episode where we talked to Guy about the elusive twister episode, and actually, by the way, I got some information on Twister, if Twister's alive, and but I got information that I need to verify with the owner of Twister before I share any information, but that, I don't know how long that will be until it happens, but yeah, you guys might need to hold your breath, though. I don't know if that's going to come up. But anyway, so the thing with chopping a trunk and then calling it Yamadori and working it, you can go back to that episode and look at the Instagram post where you can see Twister and it was a stump. Is that Yamadori, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, making a profit, that why I'm saying making a profit, it's like you go out and you collect all these cypress stumps, style mm-hmm. them up is what about some of the stuff that this, some of the work that I do, other than, you know, if we find trees every once in a while that just look good as little mm-hmm. trees. Yeah, I guess the first question before I'm going to break that into two parts is collecting a tree and stumping it. Is that Yamadori in your opinion, Carmen? I won't be offended.
No, I hadn't really considered that because I usually think of Yamadori as ponderosa pine and Rocky Mountain juniper, you know, like these really ancient trees from the mountains, whereas some of these cypress, the trunks, like you're collecting the trunk. And I mean, I don't know, that's kind of a hybrid situation because mm-hmm. you're not really collecting the tree for the overall tree.
You're
itself.
Not preserving you're, the image of the tree it was.
Yeah, you're collecting the trunk, which is definitely more of a field growing tactic. Tactic isn't the right word, but like mm-hmm. Method, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know, but you are still going out there and collecting stuff. And every now and then you do find one that maybe is more true Yamadori, you know, one that's very little or very stunted or very different. You're still getting these features that I don't know if you could get those. I haven't worked with a ton of bald cypress, so I don't know if you can get some of these same features mm-hmm. in a pot or maybe as fast as you would in a swamp. So I don't know. That's yeah. a great question. That's a tricky one.
Yeah. And I'll leave this to listeners and people who want to email me and shoot me debates on that too. It's just, I'm interested just to know, you know, like, yes, we go out into nature and this is not just cypress. We also do American hornbeam, hackberry, huckleberry, elm varieties, like all the Native American elm stuff. So we go out and we are looking for the bases of these trees to look a certain way. So one of the things I always tell people when they're learning to collect these trees with me is I always tell them like the first 8 to 10 inches are the most important part of the tree, you know, because we're going to cut it down. And the whole part of it, you mentioned this earlier, was when you collect a tree, you will be surprised how much growth you have to reduce to cut off to work mm-hmm. down to the bonsai that you could create. So mm-hmm. in a way it is, but it's still a chunk chop.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's a heavy opinionated thing in my opinion. it's heavily opinionated
mm-hmm.
the way that I see it is a better way to say that sentence. That was funky.
Yeah.
But it's yes and no, mm-hmm. in my opinion, you know. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, that's curious.
Yep. I want to see what other people think about that because it's still challenging to go find. And yes, there are cases where you've gone out to the swamp and the water and the minerals in the water that those trees are growing in affects the way they grow.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. when you're here, Carmen, I'll show you some trees that are clearly different. And I'm going to mm-hmm. be doing a YouTube channel video this season about what those trees look like too. I came around to this point now where I've collected a tree every year leading up to this point where I've got a raw tree that just came out last year, a pre-bonsai worked kind of tree that came out the year before that. The year before that, I've got the tree. It's like just about to be initially styled, and then I've got the show-ready tree. So I've got like each stage of it developing, you know, basically. So that I can show you guys that and how that works. But yeah, it goes a little bit off topic, but the trees that are truly Yamadori. And that's another thing. It's another zone kind of thing. It's like, I can't really collect trees like that anyway. So that's kind mm-hmm. of what collecting in my neck of the woods looks like.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I guess sometimes too with a deciduous tree, if you're looking at like some of the old maples or old collected, like out of orchard, some of these olives that are big kind of in the West Coast area. Sorry, I just got an alert that our greenhouse is under temperature. So I'm like, that hasn't happened yet. So I'm like, did the door blow open? I don't know. Anyway, we'll deal with that in a little bit. But it's so handy having an automatic alert on my wrist. Anyway.
There you go.
what was I saying? Oh, some of these like old orchard trees, I mean, yeah, I think I consider them Yamadori because they're collected and they're old and they're, you know, not necessarily something you could easily get in a pot. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it's a difference between deciduous and conifer or deciduous and, you know, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is tricky.
There's some kind of line there, but I don't know where that line is.
Yeah. So this kind of segues into the collecting for profit kind of thing that we said with over collecting, ethics of collecting. And so that means basically, is where you're collecting good, right? Is it the right thing to do? Is it private property? Is it a protected species? And if you're collecting the profits, and this is why at Underhill, we don't run out and collect a bunch of trees. We collected a bunch of trees in the beginning. And then I found what the quantity over quality was definitely like that became a thing instantly. And I was like, I told Doug that I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to make this special. So a lot of the trees that we sell now are grown at our nursery. So for instance, bald cypresses, we have several thousand of them sitting around in the field and then ready to be dug up and then going into pots. And we're able to replicate valuable, sought after trees like that in our field versus having to go out in nature and pull them and ship them and do that for profit. I think that's where it comes in. It's like Yamadori or collecting those trees. As we talked about earlier, it's like, I want to make that special. And that tree will be more valuable to not just me, but maybe to somebody else who would like to obtain it. And another word that I've been using a lot that I like, that I remember from talking with Julian Tsai, and then it came up later on, I was talking to David Cutchin when I would visit him, is stewarding a tree.
Yeah.
I actually love that word now. I love the thought of that, is that if you're going to collect a tree and pull it from nature, make it important. Like, that happened for a reason. You just didn't pull like a bunch of trees and then you lost some and you're like, oh, well, I can go get some more. Don't think of it that way. That's kind of where I'm at now. It's like, stop doing that. And what is a Yamadori or a collected tree in my case worth as well? That's another thing I think we should kind of touch on before we get too far past the ethics and the all that stuff.
Yeah. And I mean, I know a lot of collectors who are very ethical about their practice. You know, they don't collect an unsustainable amount of trees and it is their business. And so, like, I don't want to poo-poo on them. They're very, you know, conscious people of what they're doing and how they're doing it and why they're doing it. And, so like that, I don't have a problem with that. I guess it's more of a mentality of like man over nature, you know, like when I'm going to go out there and get everything for myself and then sell it all. You know, it's just that kind of mentality of like where the tree is not the priority. That's what really bothers me, is when it's not about the tree. If it's about the tree, sure. If it's not about the tree.
Yeah. It gets a little hairy whenever you're I collected this tree and my name is on this. And then, and then bonsai steward, like the steward, is it steward? What's the word for that? Stewardship or steward?
Yeah, stewardship.
Stewardship would be like, I collected this tree. I'm responsible for carrying it. And then whenever I'm not around anymore to care for it, it's my responsibility to guarantee that that tree will be continued to be cared for. Because I did this, not I'm doing this. You know, that's kind of like my whole thing now. Not like it was overnight, but something clicked. And I was like, because I've got trees that I've collected and that Nate, my buddy Nate Murray's collected. Shout out to Nate. We'll have him back on once collecting season's over. We'll talk about bringing people out and giving them that experience. That's really important as well. That's something that Nate specializes in. And he doesn't go out and just run out and collect a bunch of trees like that. He loves showing people how to collect and bringing them with him.
I think that's really valuable, because otherwise you're going to get people going out digging up trees. You know, like, you see how many times you see on Facebook or something, somebody's asking, can I dig this up out of a yard? Can I dig this up out of here? Like, yeah, you can, but do you know how to do it?
And so I think teaching people how to do it will give them that added, first of all, it's good for the tree. You know, the tree's not going to die or is less likely to die. But then also when you have to actually physically remove a tree and like haul it home, you know, it kind of gives you this other sense of importance to that tree because you're so involved in its whole the whole process.
It's not story.
Just,
yeah.
Yeah. You're not just purchasing it. You actually have to go and physically do the work. It's kind of different.
Yeah. And so, and I know some of our long-time listeners or people who just like are Yamadori or collecting fanatics kind of thing, and they've listened to all of our episodes about that or pick up on things I say on my YouTube channel and you're like, oh, you're contradicting yourself now. And I'm like, no, I just wasn't sure.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm a little bit more sure how, but at the same time, it is honest that I know what I had done in the past collecting
mm-hmm.
may not have been the, like you said, not for the best for the trees that I was going out to, and I wanted to get.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I've refined my collecting and I understand it differently and I go through it, you know, and it got to a point where it's like, I want this tree. And that's one of the things that I think is something that a lot of young bonsai people and practitioners get into, like aspiring to have certain types of trees in their collection.
Mm-hmm.
And they go out and they're like, there's the tree, I'm pulling it up. And I always encourage that person, get trees like field grown pieces or stuff from a nursery that you know that you would not feel bad killing first. I always encourage
yeah.
them. It always bums yeah. them out. And they're like, I'm going to pull it up anyway. You know,
okay.
Exactly. And that's the part that I can't tell people not to do, though, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always encourage people to go out and collect with me. I take people out, very small, select group of people, whereas I've let, you know, the whole thing. I pass a lot of people who want to go collect here. I'll say, hit my buddy Nate up. And also, that's a get the good shout out. If you guys, I think Nate's done for this year. He's booked all the way out, pretty sure. But if you want to go collect in Southeast Louisiana, he's your man. Also, if you want to go collect pond cypress, David Cutchin also said he takes his students out and collects as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if other people go out and collect like that, that offer that type of thing. Usually people go collect, I think Ponderosa and junipers and stuff, but it might be a little bit more, these are my secret spots kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems pretty rare that they'll take people with them, but occasionally they will. But it's like a, you know, it's...
Yeah,
it's not a widely advertised situation.
Yeah, it's rare. And if you see, and that kind of brings me to the point is like, now when I bring people out, and if Nate brings out people, and me and him have talked about this too, is we're there to instruct and teach, to bring value to the tree and the person
mm-hmm.
in their experience through collecting, not
yeah.
showing them how to make a profit by like, look for this on the tree. This is how you pull mm-hmm. it out. Now hammer out 20 more of them. You know, right. I tell people when they go collect with me, I'm like, you're looking for one thing and that's the tree that you're going to take on for several years. So let's mm-hmm. make that one thing the best tree we can find for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of times too, I think when you're collecting out west in some of these really remote spots, first of all, it's super dangerous. Like these people take dogs and guns, like there's mountain lions, like you could fall off of a cliff. Like it's not safe or easy.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, not every tree you come across is going to be the right tree to even collect. There's a lot of trees out there, and there's a lot of crap trees out, you know, like there's a lot of trees that maybe just aren't even worth it. So, I think when you're doing it, making sure you're finding the right tree is important.
Yep. And, it is kind of like that one in a million chance, because the one tree, or a few trees, if you're like, oh, I need a few trees for a group planting or something, or I just really like collecting these trees, so I collect like one every year, every other year, you know, however you go about it. Just don't overcollect, mm-hmm. basically, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But it is like a one in a million chance, because you, as an individual, are going out amongst billions of trees and saying, that's the one, mm-hmm. instead of trying to make a dent in the population mm-hmm. of trees. You know,
I think, you know, something you mentioned too, that I think kind of comes with, first of all, I want to mention that, like, it's totally okay to change your opinion too, because like, as we're going through this, we're growing and changing and our opinions change. And like in 5 years, I may have a totally different opinion on all of this.
But I think too, you mentioned like, if you take somebody out for the first time or whatever, and they're like, I want to collect this tree. And you're like, maybe don't. And they do it anyway. Like when you're collecting Yamadori, you're working with what you get. You're not getting a tree that you can do a lot of changing to. So I think that kind of comes with maturing in bonsai. Like as you do bonsai for a longer time, you realize you're not getting a tree to create, like, I'm not going to buy this to make a cascade. I am buying this tree because this tree has amazing movement and I want to show, like, you're buying the tree kind of as is, not necessarily, unless you're starting with like a sapling, you know, it's, you're not creating with Yamadori really. It's already created. You're just like enhancing it. Whereas if you get like a 1-year-old maple, you know, then you're building a tree. But with Yamadori, you're not really building anything necessarily. Yeah. So sometimes. That kind of, but that goes back to kind of to our, the question of like, well, if you're trunk chopping a bald cypress, you are building it
from scratch. Yeah.
But there's a lot of cases with ponderosa or juniper, like you're not building a tree. You're buying, you're getting a trunk, you're collecting a trunk. And like, that's kind of what you're getting. So like, don't try to make a cascade out of a ponderosa that's not a cascade.
And so I want to touch on two real quick items in my notes is like where to purchase. Because like some people will say, I want to go get a tree, and then they'll make it happen. They'll figure it out. The people who are super enthusiastic, I know you're out there. We see you. I mean, it's obvious. And more power to you guys. If you guys are refining your collecting skills, looking and getting recovery. One of the things I want to say to those people too is like, if you're going to collect a species, find somebody else who is professional or a nurseryman that is collecting that species as well, and talk to them. Because that's how you're going to get the best results. Don't BS it and be like, yeah, well, they're doing it, but I'm doing it my way. There's a reason why they're able to collect them and they're going to survive as long as they've been doing it. So that's number one. You know, finding Yamadori collectors that you aspire to collect like, because they're collecting the species that you want. That's one of my, that's like a pro tip right there.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, also where if you were to purchase one, because I've talked to people and they're like, that's really cool that you do that, but I would never do that. I would never crawl out in the mud, or I would never crawl up in the mountains with wildlife like that or any something. You know, some people get that thrill. But if you wanted to purchase one, that's another thing too, is find somebody who's not only collected those trees, but also they have been able to make healthy trees out of the trees that they have collected as proof that they collected the trees, they did well. If you're going to spend hundreds, thousands of dollars on this tree, you have to see it. That's where I've gotten to a point where it's like, if I meet a grower or someone who's collected, and I get to see their product, like what they've collected or created, like grown in the ground. And then I get to see some of their work. And I'm like, oh, well, that means that they did a lot of things that I like to look into, which are the pros and cons of that. We'll get on in a second here, is pros and cons of collected material versus field grown materials. Is they check the boxes for me, like, okay, so they put it into a substrate that works post-collection for that tree. Their fertilizing regimen was proper for recovering that tree. And before they began any work, they made sure that this tree had X requirement, whether it be vigor and that strength, they strengthened the foliage, or root mass growth was very important to that species, or trunk, you know, healing wounds and stuff so that it didn't have an unsustainable and questionable integrity in the trunk and branches, stuff like that is very important. And, you know, so I wanted to touch on the last couple of ones because I think we're coming out of like giving people an experience of collecting and as versus going out and just, you know, that's more valuable than just going out and just giving it a shot on your own, which you totally should, though, if you want. But make sure you get somebody to guide your hand a little bit. But I want to say the pros and cons of getting a Yamadori and the pros and cons of getting like a field grown piece instead to learn on. And then we were to go into the conservation side, because I know you wanted to talk about that for a minute. Pros and cons, I guess. I'll let you take the lead on this one. What do you think
pros and cons of getting a Yamadori and then of a field grown piece?
I think it really depends what you're going for. I touched on it a little bit earlier saying that like, oh, it's like with the Yamadori, what you're really doing is like taking the tree you find and enhancing it. Whereas with field grown material, a lot of times I feel like you have a little bit more say in how you're growing it. Like you can make more of the key decisions with your branching and with your styling and all of that. Whereas with the Yamadori, I feel like there's fewer choices. So it kind of depends, I think, what you want. If you're going for like I have an idea of something that I want to make, and so I need a material that's going to like let me make that thing that I am imagining, then field grown is probably what you want. Whereas with Yamadori, a lot of times you find the tree that like speaks to you because of what that tree already is. And so you're not really trying to change it. You're just trying to enhance it. So I feel like it's more of a kind of, I guess, where you want your creativity to go. Are you creating something or are you working with what's already there?
Yeah. I think my thing for pros and cons on Yamadori versus field grown stock is going to come down to roots for me personally. Mm-hmm. Cause I do agree with the whole, yeah, like you get to dictate things with field grown stock. You get a little bit more freedom cause you don't feel as bad cutting off certain parts of the tree. But the roots, this is something I always talk about in a lot of my lectures that I give about various, you know, I give all these various topics about different species or styles or technique. And I always talk about the roots every single time mm-hmm. that I give any lecture, because ultimately that's the driving force of the tree itself. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be really particular with roots, because I know I haven't collected any alpine species, but I know and you have experience from this and seeing this in Michael's garden mm-hmm. is when those are collected, that the roots on there are very particular. You can't just go in there and introduce bone size soil to all of them.
Yeah, no.
So, and then even with some of the native stuff down here, like the deciduous trees, I used to go in and bare root my trees mm-hmm. and put them straight into bone size mix. Because mm-hmm. that seemed like, you know, I got the materials, I got the nursery that I can do this with, where I've got the ability to give them proper aftercare, but they still struggle really hard with going straight into bonsai mix. Mm-hmm. If bald cypresses are really, really resilient, but it's not 100% of the time that they're going to just do exactly what you expect them to after a bare rooting.
Sure.
So I've even dialed back everything across the board that I collect because... why rush the process on a tree that was already doing its thing in nature? And you cut away, I mean, when we collect our trees, we probably only get about 15% of the root mass when we collect mm-hmm. them out of the ground. So what's the point in stripping all that away? There's also other things that are in the root system from that field soil that's extremely beneficial at the time when mm-hmm. it's old, that will help carry it to help it acclimate to bonsai pot culture and conditions. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, I think if you're going straight from field grown, yeah, usually in that case, there's more root to work with. Whereas with especially the alpine species of Yamadori, sometimes there's really not much there. And if you're looking to work on something fast, field grown is probably the way to go. Because with the Yamadori, a lot of times you grow it out in a box for like 2 years before you even go in and do a partial bare root. And then it's like a couple more years until you do the other partial bare root. And if it's a really big mass, then you're doing it in 3 or 4 stages of repotting instead of 2. And so it's like, so unless you are buying something that has already been collected and has already been in a box for a couple years and developed a root system, I mean, even at that point, you're still looking at 2 repotting seasons of like, you know, moving into a bonsai soil. But at least at that point, you know, it has regrown some roots. Whereas if you're starting from, you know, pulling something out of the ground yourself, you're looking at, I don't know, like 4 or 5 6 years before you're really getting that into a pot even sometimes. So it's like, it's a, and you can generally move a little bit faster with field grown material or even stuff grown in like nursery pots. So maybe not in the ground, but still it's, you know, you're buying pre-bonsai material. A lot of times it's already in something that's either easier to switch over to bonsai soil or it's already in bonsai soil. So
yeah, the bigger the tree, the longer the process. That's a good way to like kind of take away from that is, I mean, in some trees, I've seen this in some other bonsai cultures and like places where they pull these trees and they're able to get away with a lot more stuff. If you've got a good tight root ball and you've got field soil on it, then you can actually do some styling or guiding on that tree, depending on what you are envisioning. And then start doing that bare rooting. I remember we did a bare root on a Eagleman spruce together a while back.
Oh yeah, we did like a partial bare root on that sucker.
Yeah, and it was just like that one section. It was maybe, 10 inches across?
Yeah, it was like was it a third or a quarter of the tree? I don't think it, was it a whole half? I can't remember exactly how much it was.
It was about a third because it felt like a half because Michael walked up and he was like, keep going. And I was like, oh. I was like, okay. Because he was happy with the way the roots looked, I think.
And that one had been styled and was on a slab and was, you know, well into developing, but it really had only been half bare rooted still. So like, and you know what, this past spring I repotted a hemlock that's been in a pot for 15 years, you know, a long time, but we found a big pocket of field soil right under the center that had never been cleaned out. So it was like what? Yeah. So it's like, it's kind of crazy with these Yamadori. You have to really remember which section you worked on and if you got everything out or not, and then be prepared for whatever that means in the future.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I've seen this. The common practice is when they pull an alpine species like a Rocky Mountain or a Ponderosa or whatever it is, and then they build a box to fit the exact shape of that root ball so that it facilitates that shape until it eventually fills in enough to start making steady like cutbacks over years of cutting it and getting to the size of a bonsai pot.
Yeah.
Which is nuts when you think about it.
It's crazy.
And
sometimes you never know what you're going to get. Sometimes those roots are woody and they're going the wrong direction. And so like, what are you going to do? Your tree's going one way, your roots are going another. How do you, like, hopefully your root system grows enough in the direction that you want it to, so that you can put the tree at the angle that you're hoping for, you know, like sometimes you don't know exactly what you're pulling out of the ground until it's pulled out of the ground.
Yeah. But I just realized that we're a little later on time. So you want to touch on conservation real quick and how you feel about that?
Sure.
Yeah. And go for about 10 minutes and then we'll wrap it up. And then we got something else going on, but yeah, you guys, it doesn't even matter because the way y'all listen to it, it's like every week, but whatever. Go ahead.
So conservation, I don't necessarily buy into that, like the bonsai are the thing that are being conserved. I think because there's other ways of a better ways to conserve trees. I think the most valuable piece of conservation that bonsai lends itself to is kind of the appreciation or the connection that people start to feel with this. So like if you have a bald cypress or if you have a larch or if you have something that people feel really drawn to that was collected from a certain area, it's kind of easy to draw that parallel of, oh, well, this is the habitat problem, like this is the habitat loss, or this is the problem in that space. So like you're kind of bringing awareness and attention to it. And yeah, you have a specimen. If, you know, somewhere down the line, it's going to be unlikely that's the only one of its kind left. But I think it's more of a spokesperson for conservation rather than being the thing that's being conserved. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, so I think it's it's
we don't
useful.
Need to pull as many trees out of the ground to make that point. You would rather see some pretty good ones,
mm-hmm.
and not all of them being.
I think the best way to conserve trees is to, you know, conserve the land and conserve the fix the climate and, you know, all this other stuff. And then using those trees that we do collect as like, you know, to get people motivated to do more and do better, but not necessarily taking the trees out of their habitat to protect them.
Yeah.
Because there's gene banks and seed banks and, you know, there's other probably more efficient ways of doing that.
Yeah. My take on it is, you know, if you are aware enough of an area that's going to get wiped out or for construction purposes, I mean, this happens a lot. Or if you, like, we have a lot of coastal stuff going, like the coastal erosion type stuff going on here. People will pull trees that are just getting, they're going to get sucked into the salt water one day and there's nothing we can do and they'll die.
Yeah.
So some of that part of it is part of the conservation.
Yeah. In that case, 100%.
Yeah. And then also, if there is an abundance, like this weekend, I'm going to go collect with a couple of friends of mine. And the place we're going to, you can't step 5 feet without running into another, you know, cypress tree. So we know this area is heavily, you know, just like, I don't know what the word, colonized? It's heavily colonized. I mean, I mean, it's acres and acres and acres. I mean, across the entire area where we're going, it's just, like I said, you can't go 5 feet and you also can't look a mile without seeing them. So we make sure that these areas are plentiful and we're not going to go in a spot where, for instance, if I was going to go hunt down American hornbeams and I found two American hornbeams in the entire wood area that I was in, I'm not going to pull them. For the sake of them establishing, then I can go back later on. It might take 10 years, but you know, there's going to be more. There's going to be something, a colony will exist there. So that's the conservation I'm kind of looking at. But yeah, the appreciation and bringing them to people's attention is the most important part to me, because 9 times out of 10, I had people walk in the nursery and they don't even realize that you can make a bonsai out of some of the species I have, and then they go back to their home and they see them in the woods and the wood line right behind their home, and they're like, oh, that's what I do it for, you know. So
yeah, we've got a couple larch forests. I've probably mentioned this before, but like at every show that they're in, they'll win People's Choice, or you know, you have people coming through the garden going, oh my god, it looks like a little forest, you know, whatever. It's like they've seen this in nature, and so they can really connect to it. And I think that's really valuable in being like using that as an opportunity to be like, oh, well, did you know that these forests are being deforested, or you know, whatever the problem is, you know, it's a really good kind of
name the problem there.
Yeah. Gateway to like open the conversation.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, and then with field grown, I know we were like back and forth on field grown and Yamadori, and Yamadori's taken the, taking presence in this episode just because, I mean, it's very popular. We just wanted to get some that stuff out there, because there have been other Yamadori episodes in the past, like with me and Nate. Me and Nate like to talk about Yamadori a lot. That's really his thing. But I also wanted to bring up this part is a little bit more heavy. It's a little bit more stuff to consider than just getting excited and running out there and pulling all kinds of stuff out. And then you see people get upset. And I guess this also, this episode kind of gives some people a counter argument in a way. I don't want to feel it, but I also don't want to discourage people too, you know? So, but yeah, field grown material, it's made on site. It's grown by a grower that knows the species that they're growing usually pretty well. Like with me, I know my native species that I grow very well. So, and some of the junipers that I propagate. I mean, I propagate a lot of junipers and stuff. And I know the root systems and I know how they're going to grow. And I know that they're good for our area. That's really important. So all that stuff goes into the field grown aspect. It's like, don't feel let down that you have a field grown tree. Because I can think of a handful of trees in public collections that were that were field grown plants. They came from landscape nurseries that are beautiful bonsai now. So,
yeah, I mean, most of the azaleas in our collection are field grown. There's, I think there's one mountain azalea that maybe was collected, but most of them are, you know, grown out in rows and then stumped and then not stumped, but all the branches are cut off and then, shipped and then regrown. So it's like you're buying a trunk, essentially. So and with a lot of maples, a lot of deciduous especially really lend themselves to being field grown. So and then, I mean, some of the junipers, it can take a long time, 15, 20, 25 years to grow something that looks like a Yamadori, but you can do it with enough time and enough attention. You can get some really, really cool field grown junipers that make you really think about Yamadori. So,
Yep. So I think everyone, just to close us out, I think everyone, if you're in a certain area and your area is known for a particular species and that is a popular species that's collected, then yes, you should have one, two in your species, in your collection. If you're going to purchase them from someone, find somebody who's highly experienced that knows what they're doing, especially with aftercare. So you don't buy a tree for absorbing them out and then it's just going to die on you. So make sure you have all that stuff lined up. And if you're going to go collecting, refer to a local professional or just someone who that's what they do. I know there's people who collect and that's not necessarily like bonsai is their career. They're really good at collecting trees and giving them to bonsai people. So there's a lot of different things going on out there when it comes to that. So yeah, don't be discouraged, guys. But also just keep in mind the purpose of why we do this in the first place. It's not to diminish or annihilate entire populations of plants just for the sake of making a bonsai. That's really what I'm trying to say. So
yeah, if anybody's collecting anything that's like on the endangered list, maybe reconsider, you know, like being aware of those things is important, as well as making sure you have the right permits if you're going to go into a place that requires a permit, and you know, making sure you're doing it correctly or ethically is
as possible.
Always good.
One of the notes, just another quick note too, is that anytime that we go collect a tree from someone's yard, and that's a really good place to find some native material for me, just walk up and say, hey, if I pull this X tree out of your yard, I'll put the same thing back. And if they don't care, if they're like, that's cool, at least you put something right back in its place. And there's that whole thing. I remember David told me, it was like, leave no trace, was kind of his mentality. Make it look like you weren't even there.
Yep.
Yeah. That's the best thing you do.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah, that's a good one. I'm glad we got to talk about this, because like you had mentioned way earlier, 2 days ago when we had to cut this recording in half, you said it comes with a little bit more of maturity and realizing in bonsai where we're heading to realize these things too.
So. Yeah, but, for sure.
Anyway, so let's list off our patrons real quick and close us out for this week, and then we'll catch up with you guys on the next one. It's kind of funny, but Carmen, you know what I'm joking about. But yeah, get prepared to do this twice. All right. Starting off our list with Wallace Woods Pottery, Bonsai Samurai, Retron Studio, Wesley Thompson, Joseph Dominguez, David Smith, Eddie Fernandez, Byron Myrick Pottery, Chantel Wynn, Hist Warrior, Christina Carforia, David J. Pacaccini, Gilbert Jorez, Sean Seaman, J.M. Stewart Woodworking, Joshua Roth Limited, Nancy Hoffman, Nate Murray, Ben Crehan, Victrina Ridgeway, Timothy Arsenal, Chris Fossoon, J.S. Potts, Bonsai Marine, A.C. Castle, Luis Torres, Austin Atkins, David N., Chase Pertwee, Taylor Peacock, Rewatch Gardens, Backyard Bonsai Australia, Jay, thank you, Jay, Justin Knight, Joel Jenkins, Ryan, it's not delivery, it's DiGiorno, sorry. I'm going to set it the other way again. Snappy Chappers, Joshua Bentley, Ricky Ruins, Boyd Snellgrove, Vicky Ahoth, Mark Melatai, Draco, Michael Rouse, Joseph. There's a Joseph DiGiorno as well. Ooh. I just realized that. It's the
double
same
DiGiorno.
I Didn't even notice that till now. That's weird. Kathy Barzon, FTNR, FN, Mark Thal, DK, Rico, and Jeremy. And of course, our specimen best buds holding it down. Unryuin, Rick. Thank you so much, Rick. Bill Butler, Bill's Bayou. And of course, Mark McMillan's. So yeah, if you want to catch more content from me, you can go over to Underhill Bonsai and look at some articles I've been writing. I've been doing a water elm project, writing articles about our wonderful species. And I've gotten so much awesome information. People have been emailing me and contacting me, and I've gotten some really great photos of trees I haven't seen before. And I'm currently on this mission to find as many water elm bonsai and categorize them as I can. I've gotten a few. So we're on this mission, and I feel like I'm getting there. Anyway, I know I'm just kind of going off there, but whatever. And then you can go over to Underhill Bonsai on YouTube. I'm currently shooting content throughout the year, kind of showing the cycle of what I do with the nursery and how I deal with trees, and how, if you're talking about Yamadori, that's a great way to see what I do with collected bald cypresses. I mean, all day and all night there. And then of course you can go over to Instagram and Facebook and follow us there and see what we got going on and get ready for Say Bonsai 2025. That's the next thing I got going in my life. And then Carmen, where can they go check out your content at?
You can find me on Facebook and Instagram at Becoming Bonsai, and be sure to check out the Purple Paw Society, the National Women's Bonsai Group, working to inspire women to do more bonsai. Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
And if you want to see more about the collection at the university, you can see them at Matthew Nichols on Instagram, or what is it? mbgna.umich.edu.
Yes, go check those trees out. They're awesome. And I can't wait to go up there and potentially work on them. Potentially. We'll see.
You want to come help repot? We got like a 500 pounder we got to do. So,
I mean, if it's anytime soon, I don't know if I can help you out with that.
I know it's too soon.
I've got way too many trees to work on. So maybe next time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, speaking of next time, we'll catch you guys on the next episode. Y'all have a great week.
Bye.